Okay, so listen up right now. Bowen Yang and I, Matt Rogers, have a little bit of a show we want to invite you to. It's called Night Soap. It's part of Ars Nova's AntFest, and it's at Ars Nova on June 22nd, babe.
At 7 p.m. It's an amazing show. Matt and I are so proud of it. We are both in full drag.
Geesh.
The show is about two chocolate dynasties, the Hershey's and the Nestle's, warring with each other to fight for who's going to be the first chocolate company to sell chocolate in space. This is all true. It's part dynasty. It's part war paint. It's just a gag. Come see it. We'd love to see you there. June 22nd at 7 p.m. Tickets are on sale right now at arsnovanyc.com.
The wigs are going to be high and so are the stakes. It's Night Soap and tickets are on sale now.
My grandma and your grandma were sitting by the fire. My grandma told your grandma, I'm gonna set your flag on fire. You're talking about hey now, hey now, hey now. Aiko, aiko, ande. Giacomo, fino, anane.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling. And I had to start the pod because these queens were nerding out about video games. And I said, well, why don't we include everyone
this
in this discussion?
This is the first gay with a Y-mer that I've had, we've had on the
this
show.
This is true. This is the first gamer
yes.
that we've had on.
I think, okay, we're going to talk about this after we introduce him, but I think I'm dealing with some throat stuff, some vocal timbre stuff.
Do I sound like I'm dealing with some throat
stuff? No, but I think our guest is. But let's go through the credits, honey.
Just to preface everything that everyone's voices are going to be a little froggy. Credits include,
and just before we go through the credits, I'm sorry, one more thing. The AC is running because, bitch, it is hot.
It's a heat wave.
As, your love is like a heat wave.
As Martha something once said during the Motown era.
The Shirelles.
Okay,
no,
girl.
It wasn't the Shirelles. I'm sorry.
I think it's Martha and the Vandellas.
Or something like that.
Or maybe I made up that name because it sounds like it could be.
The Shirelles sang Mama Said. Okay, the credits. Let's do this.
Okay, guy code, girl code. And you've seen him on Seth Meyers.
Oh, honey. And he's a true icon. I mean, you see him all around the city.
Headlines, Carolines, frequently.
And he has his amazing show that he co-hosts with Christy Cello, Battle of the Divas. The next
look
one,
for that.
Yes.
This month, June 28th. At Union Hall.
It's Matt and I have done it. It was a blast. Matt famously beat me, and Christina Aguilera vanquished over Britney Spears, but that's we'll get to that.
Absolutely, but I am also a loser of the show, too. So we'll talk all about it. Everyone, it is Mateo Lane.
Hi. How are you guys?
You know, good.
You make me sound so much nicer than I think about myself, so I should.
Stop. What is
come
it?
Back here. I also just noticed that I have a zit on my shoulder, so I'm sorry.
I have a zit on my shoulder, and I was picking at it on the subway.
Oh, I can't wait to get home and pop it.
Like a full asshole. And then I was literally doing it. And then
do I sound okay? By the way,
you sound
great.
Perfect.
All right,
I was
checking.
Just I had to acknowledge the whole like throat thing because I'm very scratchy, and I just want to get that out.
Yeah,
that
was like a Lindsay Lohan right moment. Now.
You were vulnerable. You were like Katy Perry live streaming.
Oh my God, we got it. Mateo. Do you know about this whole Katy Perry?
I don't
live
care about
thing?
Her or Miley Cyrus or Taylor Swift. I don't care about it. I think they're all talentless.
Thank God, Miley. Okay. Oh, we were in DC.
You think Miley's talentless?
Yes.
What?
I think she's horrific.
She's got a fine voice.
Based on singing?
She sounds like beef jerky.
I think
she
I
sounds
disagree.
Like, oh, wow. Cake.
I don't she think that's how out. She sounds.
She does. Whenever she talks, she's like, yeah, so, hey, my dad does Billy Ray Cyrus.
Well, you have a very high standard for vocalists.
And I should. Yes. Yeah, I keep thinking, you know, it's like every time I talk to people, it's like I keep feeling like I'm the bad person and that I should downplay my feelings. But then I watch Whitney Houston and I think, you know what? Mm-hmm. I stand by it.
Yeah,
that was the standard at one time. And then before her, the standard was Aretha Franklin.
Yeah.
And then before that was Judy Garland. Then these bitches better step up.
Yeah. Okay.
No, you know what? I think there's a lot to that. I definitely think a lot of the bullshit that we're tolerating, like in the media, like all the feuds and stuff, if we just upped our standards on talent, we wouldn't
be
dealing
with it.
It's
our fault. This is what Fran Lebowitz says, is that it is the audience's fault that art is getting worse and worse because everything's becoming more broad and on the nose, mm-hmm. and people can't handle subtleties anymore. So that's why theater's going down. That's why like every type of art is just being broadened and broadened and broadened because they have to go down to the audience's level because the audiences are getting stupider and stupider.
Oh my God. You know what? That reads in almost every way.
Mateo and I talked about Fran Lebowitz one night, and you were there, Matt. We went to
Have you watched the documentary yet?
I love the documentary.
I watch it probably once a week.
It's so good. Like her whole thing about Times Square is genius.
Oh, it's so good.
What's her thing about Times
Square? She's like, people keep shitting on Times Square, and it's like tourists keep coming into New York and shitting on Times Square, and it's like, okay, if you don't like it, then, like, tell us, because that's for you.
We'll
take it away if we can. Like, that's for you.
She's like, you know what Times Square needs if you're a New Yorker? A butcher, a bookshop. She's like, you walk around, you hear tourists say, oh, we went to this restaurant. They sang. We didn't like it. Well, really, let us know so we can get rid of it.
She knocked down that fucking Red Lobster.
And then she has this joke about how Times Square is, like, a gay... It's, like, the new gay club back in the 80s. Because it's, like, now it's, like, you see someone you know in Times Square, and you're like, wait, what are you doing?
What the fuck are you doing here?
I'm not really here. I'm just for research.
Yeah.
I came with a friend.
It's crazy because I'm there every day of my life because I work there.
Yeah.
Right. And it is truly a batshit insane place.
Yeah. It's like, very...
It's funny that we call it, like, commercial and safe because I think I feel least safe there, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I mean, the other week a car ran through, like, 18 people.
That and also I think what with what's going on in the world, I'm now a lot more conscious in the past 2 years of, like, terrorism, perhaps, like.
Well, that's why I moved to Malibu.
Absolutely, Liza. Thank God, Liza's here to chime in.
Pizzazz.
Yeah, it couldn't handle all the pizzazz that's going on. Let's call it that. Let's call all the bullshit that's happening in the world all the pizzazz.
Oh my God,
I can't handle the pizzazz either, and it makes me a little paranoid when I'm in, like, a place that I know. Because I'm, like...
Target.
You know, it could be a Target or whatever.
A Target, Target the store.
It makes me feel crazy because I'm like, it's not going to happen. But, like, it makes me feel crazy because, like, we have to feel crazy.
Well, that's why I bring Depends.
Yeah.
I just call Billy Stretch. And I say, I'll just... Some Depends.
Yeah. I'm happy to know that Liza's not afraid. You know, Liza not being afraid, and God knows she's got reason to
be
afraid.
I'm a hoofer.
Liza, you're a hoofer, and we love you so much. And now tell us a little bit more about these dresses you're selling on the Home Shopping Network.
I broke my knee.
So how did you do that? But do you remember?
Sitting around upside down in a hospital.
Okay.
So I started to fool around with stuff I love. I had my knee replaced. So I was lying around doing anything. I thought, I hate this. Oh. So I started working with clay.
Yeah, okay.
She started working with clay. That's the big takeaway. And that she hurt her knee. Guys, we're just quoting, Mateo is quoting, I should say, this gorgeous video of Liza on the Home Shopping Network.
Is that real?
It's real.
Oh, I quote verbatim.
Oh, my God.
Literally, the host, by the way, I mean, this woman, this some gay spliced together the best of Liza Minnelli on the Home Shopping Network. And she was laying like she was in traction. And Liza could have been like face plant a bowl of mashed potatoes, and the host would still be like, "That's right, Liza, $4.99."
Oh my God! So she was truly just there to, like, be Liza Minnelli,
and then just taking calls too.
Yeah. Oh, they had a woman call. The host is like, "All right, we have Doris on the line. Doris is from Georgia. Doris, say hi to Liza Minnelli today." And Liza goes, "Hi, Georgia from Doris."
My favorite is the woman who says, "And Liza, I love you so much. You're so inspiring to me. You're a mentor to me." And then
thank you so much. You're my mentor too.
You're my mentor too.
You're my mentor too.
Oh man, is it sad or is it funny?
Oh, it's both.
Or is it truly both in a glorious way?
It's Liza, when I think of you, I immediately think of Sequence. Oh, thank you.
And at one point, like, she's like, you know, she's trying to, like, upsell. So she's like, Liza's wearing a bracelet, and the host's like, you could wear 4 or 5. And the host goes, or Liza goes, of what? She goes, the bracelets. And Liza goes, one'll do.
One'll do.
I mean, I think you were the one, Mateo, to tell me that they're putting, like, Liza out to pasture.
Liza's putting herself out to, yeah, Liza. Well, she sold her apartment in New York, and she's moved out to the West Coast. It's sort of like when a dog knows it's going to die, it, like, goes in the backyard itself.
Yeah, cats do that too. They go off to run and go be by themselves. Yeah.
So I'm just going back outside.
Oh my God.
Listen, the day she goes,
and says Bowen.
And she's been white knuckling it for about 25 years. But I mean, I truly love her. So that will be devastated the day she goes.
Mateo has a true roaster spirit for the people that he loves, because you truly come for the people that you love.
Yes.
Like, I know another one is Mariah. Like, deep down in your heart, that's a beloved icon.
Mariah is an interesting one because I can't quite figure out why I keep going back to her. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm on YouTube, like, I will end up on Mariah Carey.
Yep.
High notes and singing. There's something alluring about Mariah that's different than Whitney. It's different than Christina. Mariah fans are a peculiar fan.
Yep,
I mean, it's a specific person. It reaches to a certain genre of person, persona. It just, she's...
I know who it reaches.
I don't know what it is about her.
The hoes. If you're a true hoe in your heart... You love Mariah.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
An insecure hoe.
Everyone that I've met that tells me they love Mariah, I'm like,
yeah.
You're a hoe.
But I don't know what it is. And I know Barbara and Whitney are truly on if you know, they're better singers. Right, at the end of the day, they're better singers.
No, I don't. I disagree.
But I think Mariah, there's something more attractive about her. Now, technically, okay, the runs and all that stuff, like, they're all equal. But, like, as a sing, like, as you're born with a voice.
Yeah.
I think Whitney was born with a,
you know what,
voice.
Yes. You think, like, on their best day of their life, if you put Whitney, Mariah, and Barbara and Celine all up there together.
Barbara.
Who do you Barbara? On the best
no
day of
question.
Her life? Wow. Mm-hmm. I would have thought Whitney Houston, you would have said.
No.
Mateo knows sort of the back catalog of Barbara stuff, though.
Yeah, people when they think of Barbara, they think of her like, hello, I'm holding my hands on my head.
Yes, you're framing
yourself.
My chickens
lay green eggs. You know what I mean? She's like a total wacko and, you know, that kind of voice. But when she was really in her prime, it was something pretty wild.
What was that clip you showed us of her? It was some live concert. She's got her full fucking fro out, but she, like, is belting her tits off, and then she's, like, she sheds a single tear.
It was in the 1970s. It was during the promotion of A Star Is Born, and she was singing. Yeah, and her voice, I can't say enough.
What was that one? It was from A Star Is Born.
Mm-hmm. It was
Evergreen?
Not When I Fell For You. No, not Evergreen, because she was singing real high. Like, it was, like, G, 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 G. Every note was up there.
Oh my
I'll
God.
Have to look it up.
And it was a ballad?
The ballad.
Oh, wow.
Well, that changed things for me because, I kind of had this perception of Barbara as like, hello, gorgeous.
As
like,
more like a theatrical singer
yes.
and less like a technical, I'm going to blow you away with my range and.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Just technique.
And like that like changed it for me. And that was like very recent.
She also has something that Mariah and Whitney don't have, which is a perfect passaggio. So her head voice and chest voice are perfectly blended.
Yes.
So she can jump to either one. But Whitney could never blend them. Mariah can only blend them from up to down.
Uh-huh.
And it's only mid register. So it's not like when she's way up there, mid register, she can go, like she can do that. But Barbara can swift flip up with a perfect passaggio. So to me, she just is a natural singer.
Yes.
Like also her face, her nose, her cheeks, like her, you know, she was built like a
singer.
Singer. Yeah.
It's funny. Later on in Mariah's career, the register switches were really
obvious.
Rough. Like,
really
I remember. During like Heartbreaker, like she would jump up to those wild notes and those crazy verses in Heartbreaker, and it was I almost thought to myself as I was like whatever like 12 years old listening to it, I was like, I wonder if she recorded these words
separately
in one take and then the chest voice notes like in another take because they sound so different.
Yep. Through the Rain, Charm Bracelet, she does it the worst.
Yes,
because Through the Rain. And I love Through the Rain. I love that song, but it's too
distracting.
It's distracting. It is distracting. She was okay, so like 90, she'd always had that sort of whisper, but she started out as a real belter.
Yeah.
And when she would sing in her head voice, but there was the blend, it was masked, I think, a little better.
Really
then,
used her low voice too.
Oh yeah.
Really used the low register of her voice.
But then once Butterfly came out, she decided to really focus on that like silky head voice. And because her natural like tessitura was already a little higher, if she was gonna belt, the jump wasn't so extreme, but then the voice started to deteriorate in 97 and she never took care of her voice nodules, and it by the time she did Heartbreaker, her voice is good, but there's this like it's kind of it's a big
it's
jump.
Different it just had changed,
and Whitney's is the same.
Yeah,
Whitney's is the same.
You know what I just listened to? I just revisited It's Not Right But It's Okay.
That's the song I was thinking of.
The
but
dance
I also
remix. I fucking
oh,
love
it's
that
so
song.
Good.
You were making a fool of me. And then her like crazy ass like vibrato on that belt. Oh, it is lit.
My friend Mitch, who's a DJ, always plays that whenever I'm like Whitney, and he knows what I'm talking about. I mean, it's
oh my God.
He said, my friend Mitch is a DJ, and I asked him, because he performs only at gay place, gay this, gay that, and he's...
Do you mix Purse First?
Yes,
stuff?
Yes, that's
yeah.
It's, but yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I said, who is, like, what music do you put on that makes people dance the most? And he said, number one is Whitney.
Wow. I want to dance with somebody, how will I know? You move to those songs,
and
you just get up, so emotional.
Yep. And her cover of I'm Every Woman, when that beat
comes in, you
have to move.
It's not right, but it's okay. That dance remix is so iconic, and also I do have some tea that it's about to come back to the gay community in a big way.
That song?
That song.
And
that's
wait.
All I'm going to say.
What?
All right. This means a final performance of RuPaul's.
I cannot confirm or deny.
All right.
But that song is going to be
back.
Something
they
that
should
is
bring that
be
song back every year.
Back in our lexicon. And I am so excited about
you
it.
You know what I want? Because I love Mariah's Honey remix, which
yeah.
is a very similar sort of vibe. I want, this is what I want. Okay. And then we can get to, we'll talk about my childhood.
No, this is lit.
This is the exact conversation.
I want to take control of Mariah's life. Mm-hmm. Get rid of the manager.
Yeah, this Stella, is
the
things that I would do.
Stella.
Yes.
I heard she's a horror.
Horrible. Oh, I ask. Trust me. I ask. I shouldn't say that. All right. Let's number one. Get rid of the manager. Yeah. Fire everybody but the backup singers around her. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Get her into a detox program.
Yeah.
She is bipolar. Her brother came out and said she's bipolar and self-medicated and a drunk.
Completely.
And said she'll end up like Whitney. That's what he said.
Gosh.
So let's get rid of the drugs. Let's get rid of, because it's pill popping.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I want a year of you on an island with a physical and a mental, like, guru.
Yes.
And get you mentally and physically back in a place where she doesn't care about the music anymore. No. She doesn't care about the singing. She's completely emotionally disconnected. And she's lip syncing everything. So I want her back in form. And I don't want her to come back and sound like her old self. I want her to come back and sound like
the best
evolved version of Mariah. Because the problem with Mariah's got the makings of a great, she needs a Ray of Light album.
Yes.
I'm saying Mariah is, and Emancipation's great, but it wasn't as emotional as I would say like Madonna's Ray of Light, where it was such a change.
A true reinvention.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I think Mariah, she's biracial. Her sister's a HIV positive prostitute. Yeah. Her father wasn't in her life. She's had three divorces. She's had ups and downs. So much happened to her. And I think as her fans evolve, we're ready to evolve with her. I want to see a mature Mariah come back and give me an Adele album. Give me a sad album.
I don't care if your basics.
If your whistle notes are gone, you had them, you did them.
Who cares?
We're done with them. You know, I don't care. Just come back and give me the story.
Tell us the truth. Because you know what? She was really able to tell the truth. Mm. In the beginning of her career, her lyrics were incredible.
Because she cared.
Incredible talent as a writer.
Emotion. The album Emotion.
Yeah, the album
That's
Emotion,
one of my favorite albums.
The album
so good.
Music Box. Even
Love
her lyrics
Music
when
Box.
She was writing at 20 years old for
Vanishing,
Vision of Love.
Vanishing.
At 20 years old. And this is a person who also arranges all her own music.
And has a 5-octave range on top of it.
This is a true genius. She didn't become a superstar by mistake.
No. You nailed it on the head just now. Give her a year off. Tell her to really just come to Jesus with all this shit that she's gone through. And then, like, I don't know.
Oh, my God. It makes me weirdly emotional, to be honest with you. She was so huge for me. Like, I think that was the first album, Music Box, that I ever really found and, like, played. Mm-hmm. And then Butterfly, even though that was, like, the turning point in her career,
But that's a great album.
It was my favorite album, I think, ever
in my
life.
My All, but Honey.
My All. Honey. When I was playing My All for Henry, and, like, I guess maybe I had to grow up with it because he didn't really get it. I'm like, oh, my God,
Henry.
This song is so important to me.
It's so good.
This song is so important to me.
See, Mariah's let me down more than Whitney, and Whitney died.
That's the thing, is it's like she couldn't.
I mean, yeah. Mariah might as well, you know. I don't know. She's just a waste of, like, okay, so New Year's, right?
I was gonna ask
she
you.
She used the
I
word nonchalantly, casually in a song. Just as a lyric, nonchalantly.
I was performing a bunch of shows on New Year's, right?
Yeah.
So I have
my
phone off for most of the night because I'm on stage.
God.
I'm trying to focus. And I get off stage and I turn my phone on and I get, I'm not making a joke, 70, I counted, 73 text messages.
They know who to reach out.
Never
I
mind
think I
the
might
tweets.
Have texted you.
Never
but,
mind the
oh,
tweets.
Yes, yes, you did. Yeah. Nikki Glaser texted me.
Oh, my God.
I mean, and I was like, oh, my God, this is it. Mariah died. What happened? I thought Mariah
happened.
Died.
Something
and then
happened.
I watched it and it was worse.
Yeah.
It was worse. I thought, you know what? But I thought, good. I'm glad that, I thought that would be a turning point for her to, like, sort of refocus, and she didn't.
No.
She didn't.
My favorite line is, do the lift just for laughs.
Hey, everyone, this was a number one hit.
This is a number one
Meanwhile,
hit.
Meanwhile, behind her is like,
doesn't get
like
any better.
These, like, whistle tones.
Doesn't
Honestly,
get any better.
It was like the ball dropping and the year changing didn't even happen. The number one topic was what had just gone on with Mariah. Everyone stopped at the party. Was that we didn't have cable. We were all, like, circled around one iPhone. It was such a moment. And then people wouldn't stop talking about it for, like, over a week.
Well, Mariah's problem is she does, you know, she's not graceful either. I mean, one other thing I don't like about her is her hate towards Ariana Grande. Which,
it's
stupid. And here's my thing about Ariana. She is a talented young girl.
Mm-hmm.
I crack jokes about her all the time because I say she has the diction of a fog machine. But, like, she's not my enemy. You know what I mean?
No, but she's got bad diction.
Although I did say on Comedy Central that Whitney now can sing better than Ariana. But I think even
it's
Ariana would agree.
Yeah, she would agree.
Yeah, she would agree.
But I think what she pulled off with the Manchester, the sort of that festival that she threw after the attack, I thought that was
It was really cool.
Yeah.
She did a very cool thing.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and Mariah just... Anyways, but that's the... life is categorized by very few things, and Mariah's one of them.
Divas are one of them. Let's just, like, break... Let's just, starts like, expand.
With, I could tell you right now, it goes from Maleficent to Storm to Barbara Streisand to Mariah.
Divas.
To Cleo Lane, then to Maria Callas.
Okay, because we were going to talk about Maria Callas.
I will talk to you, and I will cry.
I can't even get my head around the Maria Callas thing with you.
Why?
Because your depth of knowledge about it, it's so funny. You were showing us a YouTube video, and you were able to, like, stop it at points and, like, science teacher out on
you
it.
You were giving a seminar on Maria.
You are... That's your favorite video on YouTube, isn't it?
The one where she was singing D'Amore al Dolce Impero, and it was showing the notes and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. It's such a great... Yeah.
Okay, I mean...
Let's start there, because usually we ask all of our guests what was the culture that, like, shaped you, that, like...
Sleeping Beauty.
Sleeping Beauty. Maleficent.
Bigger than I think
Maleficent, the first gay icon.
And let me explain... I didn't realize how big of an impact... The two artists of that film that impacted me were Mark Davis, who's my favorite artist, who illustrated Maleficent, Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella, Cruella de Vil. He was sort of the female...
Wow, he created them.
Yes. He was the female... Like, when they needed... Drawing the female body is... By the way, I for those listening, I
He's
went to art
artist.
School, and I drew just TV commercials for and fashion ads forever.
This is someone who's an incredible comedian, incredible artist, and incredible singer.
Renaissance
just
man.
So you know, okay. What we have on the show
Single
today.
Desperate. The female body is a very difficult image to sell to an audience, and Mark Davis was the king. They had seven artists who were like the head animators of Disney, and they sort of created all the characters that we know today.
Right.
From 1939 was Snow White, all the way up through Jungle Book, which is like 65. They probably all stopped around the 70s at some point. Right, so Mark Davis was a big influence on me. He created Maleficent. And Ivan Earle, who was the artistic director for that film, also, if you look at Sleeping Beauty, first of all, most Disney films take 1.5 to 2 years to make, and a background takes a day to make. Sleeping Beauty took 7 years to make.
Wow.
And the backgrounds took about a week to make.
Wow.
So Ivan Earle, who was a modernist painter at the time, was taking these old tapestries from, you know, the Renaissance and 14th century and all these things, and then adapting that for Sleeping Beauty, which they also mixed with Tchaikovsky's Sleeping Beauty Ballet.
Right, right, right.
So the whole film is just an artistic masterpiece. They literally could have a museum just on that movie. But the movie itself, it's funny because I tried to link what my connection is with all my sort of I'm a very obsessive personality.
Yes.
A lot of gays are actually.
Yeah, I think.
We latch on to things. So Maleficent is one, and Sleeping Beauty, the singing, and then I do not tell people this. I am a nerd about skyscrapers.
Wow.
I am on a skyscraper message board called Skyscraper Forum. I am obsessed with high-rise construction and super tall skyscrapers all over the world, specifically New York. It's, you know, New York versus Hong Kong and Chicago. And those are the world's three largest skylines.
Mm-hmm.
Hong Kong, number one. The movie, the architecture of that movie is the
spires.
The spires and the castles, if you look at it, like, image-wise, I just must have soaked up so much that I'm subconsciously finding other things in real life that bring me back to Sleeping Beauty. So Maria Callas would be a big one for me because the movie was made in the 50s when Maria was the queen.
The singer
for Sleeping Beauty has a very round sound, and she's a coloratura soprano like Maria Callas. Uh-huh. So I'm attracted to that like, sort of bottled round sound of an opera singer, and then artistic wise, and then Maleficent, and then Maleficent. I mean, it's, you know, a whole thing.
What about Maleficent?
My joke is that, like, she's a gay icon. Her requirements are she has horns and she's a cunt. We're like, good enough for me. Get in there. Maleficent.
The horns do a lot of work.
Get in the pantheon.
Yes.
The thing I've drawn the most in my life is Maleficent. I would sit when I was a kid. My mother is also an illustrator. I think it's genetic.
She never
taught me how to draw. She was just Italian Mexican. She had kids. That was her life. Mm-hmm. But my brother, sister, and I are all artists. My brother's a top designer at Apple. Way your phone, he lives in San Francisco, the way your phone looks and how it moves and how it's designed, my brother does all that.
Wow.
And I illustrated TV. I mean, we're all sort of artistically, it's genetic.
Yeah.
And I would sit and draw. I'm not making a joke. I would go through a ream of paper a week. which is 500 sheets. And my mom would scream at me because she would say, use the... Because I would make one line. If I didn't like it, it went to the back and I did it again until it was perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
And my mom would, you use the back of these papers? I knew I didn't like it. But I, Maleficent, I drew... I must have drawn her... And I also did flip books with Post-its. I would go to Staples and fill Post-its up with flip books, and I would sit and draw all day. My Kate cousin would draw, too, so him and I would sit. So he lived next door to me. So I would sit and draw with him.
Also, I'm a Maleficent fan.
He's not a big Maleficent fan, but he's definitely a big faggot. And yeah. So we would draw, like, women all day. Is he an Ursula gay? He's not into the Disney movies, to tell you the truth.
What do you think of Ursula?
Oh, I love her. Divine, yeah. Please.
Yeah.
Ali Johnson or Frank Thomas, one of those two designed her and based her off of Divine.
Right, yeah. Divine was the inspiration. Okay, that's so funny that this, like, the ream of paper was, like, this beautiful thing for you. Because, I like, drew a lot as a kid. Like, I didn't really, like, grow into it as an adult. But, like, the best thing that ever could have happened in a week was my dad came home from work and stole, like, 500 sheets from the office. And I was like, yes!
Yes!
Stuff to draw on.
Yes. And I still, you know what's sad? As I was thinking about this the other day, I'm getting back into portrait painting.
Great.
But I, because I have drawn so much. I was talking to Henry about this the other day.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I was talking to him, like, he was playing, he was, like, tired or something. So he was literally, like, zombie eyes, but playing these amazing piano. And I said, Henry, I said, does it ever, like, shock you that, like, you in your sleep can play the piano, like, unbelievably well, but, like, it doesn't even matter to you? And he's just kind of like, not that it doesn't matter, but there's days where you're just like, sure. You're over it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I said, I've gotten to a point in my life where I've drawn so much that part of me has just kind of stopped.
Yeah.
I've stopped sitting and drawing at a table with my imagination, and it really makes me sad because it was such a personal...
Totally.
I don't know how... I'm not sure how I'm going to get back to it, but...
Well, do you feel that way about... Do you ever feel that way about comedy or stand-up or anything? Like, that you've tapped out? I don't know.
Stand-up is too new to me yet. I've only been doing it 5 years.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So, to me, I'm still exploring and discovering and finding my voice. And getting up in front of a crowd, like, surges you with that adrenaline.
Right.
And it's more goal-oriented. It's a new... I am a person who enjoys challenge.
Yep.
And it's a new challenge to me. So, I'm still learning that world.
Right.
We're drawing. It's like, if you told me, I need you to... I can literally draw anything you want.
Anything. You can draw anything.
Yeah.
But that's so funny because this goes back to the thing where you're like, well, you know, gay people are sort of obsessive, or not all of us.
I'm
like,
a very obsessive person and latched onto things and did not let go.
But meanwhile, like, you do let go of these things. And we were just talking about video games before we went on air, hit record. And, like, I, for a period of time in the last, like, this is, like, the best year in gaming in decades, I think. And so now I'm finally getting back into stuff because there's stuff that's, like, attracting me. Mm. But, like, for, like, a solid 8 years, like, I was not playing video games. And I was like, it's boring, whatever. So, like, that's a passion or an art
form. No, but it's
the
same thing where it's, like, you give so much energy to something and then something happens where...
dies about it.
You have to come back.
Yeah. Totally.
You have to come... And, you know, I also created a cartoon that I spent months... I mean, there's... to me... As an illustrator artist, I think actually all art really does. Singing, it all function the same way. The evolutionary process and what inspires you all work the same way. I think for me, I can't speak on certain people.
Mm-hmm.
As an illustrator, I've only had less than 5 moments where my skills are up to par. I can draw anything I want.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean I care about it. Where this something happens to you where there's this surge of like when I did my cartoon, right?
Uh-huh.
I saw it in my head, and I actually can't put it into words. I just knew I had to get it all out.
Wow.
And in a month, I did 500 drawings, fully colored, full drawings, characters, storyboards, outlines. And I literally, one day, I did one last drawing, I looked at it, and I said, okay, done. And that kind of surge where it's like, it fills you up, and you have to get it out, has only happened like...
5 times, you said?
Less than 5.
Identify with that.
There was a when I was in. I'm sorry, I'm talking so much.
No,
but like,
this is perfect.
There. Last time that happened, I was in college, and we were in a storyboarding class, and we had to come up with like our final piece or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I just I was my friend Sophia is Greek, one of my neighbors in Chicago, and her mom would do it's called tassography, where they read the coffee grounds, very similar to like tea leaves in the yeah. Greek coffee cups. And something hit me where this story of this girl who's Greek and she wants to learn this the ancient tradition, and her grandmother, you know, is trying to teach her. And one night she went to bed and she was visited by this spirit, and the spirit took her and she fell into the cup and everything started. All the symbols came to life, and she, you know, this whole thing. And it just hit me, and I was like, and so I did. And again, and it has to, for me, it has to happen within a night. Wow. So in a night, I did 300 drawings. I just sat up and I just did all the drawings that I possibly could until I got it out. And then it was done. And then it's like this feeling of like whoosh is yeah, out.
Because you're intrinsically an artist. I think sometimes like
I think that's the yeah, Italian in you. That's the Italian.
I am so Italian, by the way.
No, I'm saying like passionate.
It's just that kind of like it's like
you have to get it out. I mean, it's the way you express yourself.
It feels very it's Renaissance era. It's like yeah. you know, you just do it.
But it doesn't come like so now, like I did Princess Cupcake, which is the name of my cartoon I'm pitching 2 months from now. That has all been an annoying process the entire time. Not the drawing part, the everything else.
All the bullshit. Yeah.
I don't know the next time I'll be that. Like, I've tried to pick up and do a comic book, or I've tried to do this and stuff, yeah. and my brain is just like,
but
I
it's fine that you don't know, because you know it will happen again.
It will happen
because
again.
Because that's just who you are.
I hope. It may act, you know what? And it may not.
Will.
It may not.
But you know what? Like, I just don't believe that could happen, because if you think back to the beginning of your life, it's been happening, right? Whether it be in any area of your life, there comes a time when you're an artist, you have to reveal something new about yourself, or at least prove to yourself that that you've changed, or when you've learned things. Like, for me, it's like whenever I write like a new show, I feel so accomplished at the end, because it's like, okay, well, I created something that's like a piece of myself. Mm-hmm. That's just, I think, how some people exist in the world. Mm-hmm. Like writers, mm-hmm. you know, the way that they get that out is by writing. Yep. Actors performing, they latch onto a piece, they feel they connect to it, and it reveals something about themselves. You, I think, maybe right now in your life, that's most naturally coming out with art.
Yeah.
Which is like... And really fascinating when you take into account that you have so many talents.
I would be okay if it came even just one more time in my life. I actually don't expect it. Maybe another 15 years.
Wow.
But the kind of energy that it is it also exhausts you. You know what I mean? Like yeah. it's an exhausting process.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
it's like total catharsis. I mean, I don't know how to describe it, but if it comes in 10 years from now, it comes. And if it comes earlier, it comes. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Right.
But my skills, at least, will be up to par. I mean, I make sure that I still draw every once in a while, so I keep up my
stay
muscle
technically
memory.
Right.
And that's
right.
perfect, because then the skill isn't a variable. It's not going to be a question mark when you do return to it.
Right.
It's like, it's unlike Mariah, where it's like, hopefully when she does go back to this like authentic place with her music, like her limit will be that she can't like do all 5 octaves, but at least she'll like return to it with some sort of inspiration.
Well, that's what happened to Maria Callas too, is when she wanted to go back, the voice wasn't able to do what it was able to. That's what sucks about singing. It's like athletic. It's being an athlete.
Right.
It's making me think of, I used to run every single day. Like athletics were such a big part of my life. Yeah. Like sports were huge for me. Every single day I ran 6 to 8 miles, and I was like a really good track athlete. And that happened all throughout high school. And then one day I just stopped and I never did it again. And now when I try to work out the way I did, or just try to work out at all, I end up doing too much, or like really exhausting myself. And I don't think it's because I'm out of shape. I think it's because I'm used to what I
was.
Your
brain is still used to a certain
exactly.
Like,
and
level.
I think that with these artists, mm-hmm. the same thing happens. Artists and athletes, so similar.
Yeah.
And I think that Mariah, I think she's facing the fact that she is not the athlete that she was. And that is devastating.
Yeah.
And it's depressing. And that's why age is so real.
Yeah.
I think that's why she hates Ariana Grande. She sees a premium talent right there, and it's being used to its full potential at the right time. And she's thinking to myself, and this is, she's thinking to herself, and she is like put in an industry where she has to think about it. Oh shit, I'm old and I can't do what I did. And that is the world's fault.
Joan Rivers always said, she goes, comedy will keep you alive forever.
Yeah.
She's like, you know, I would go. I mean, she died, but you know what I mean? Like, it's.
I saw her in the last 3 years of her life on stage.
Don't even tell me that. Because I never saw her or
I
met
did.
Her, and
I saw her do a show
me.
On the Lower East Side. There was like 25 people in the audience. I went on a. No, it wasn't 3 years ago. It was
your freshman year of college.
It was my freshman year of college. I was on a date with a girl. And I saw Joan Rivers do stand up, and she was still working out jokes. Mm-hmm. She was in her, I guess, 80s?
70s, 80s.
Late 70s?
Yeah.
Still working out jokes.
Yeah. Joan Rivers said she was like, I was at, you know, you'll go, I go out to lunch with these old Hollywood actresses who are beauties in their day. And we walk out and the paparazzi say, can you please move so we can get a picture of Joan? Mm. She goes, comedy will keep you alive forever.
Yeah.
And she is right. I don't even know how I fell into stand-up comedy. I mean, I should be drawing for a living. But like, part of me is happy that I'm doing comedy because it's like, at least maybe that will keep me sharp forever.
Mm-hmm. You've got, you know? I mean, you've got like, you know, a post to like that you can go and touch and like, so that you can like be in the sort of the comedy camp for a little bit, and then inevitably you'll end up.
Comedy is the world I feel most. I've always felt a little outside of every circle group I've ever been in. Mm-hmm. I always feel a little on the outside or not accepted. Mm-hmm. Comedy is the first place that I feel totally accepted, and I think it's because, you know, I'm with these stand-up comedians every night who are weirdos. Mm-hmm. They're weird people, yeah. You know, and it's just the first place I've ever, like, that's why I love comedy, too, is because I feel like I finally have a home. Like, after 30 years, I'm like, oh, I finally have a group of people who likes me for being me. I don't have to feel insecure, you know, all these things. So.
Totally.
You, I think, hit me with the best joke I've heard in, like, maybe 2 or 3 years. You went off on this tirade about Rachel Ray and her blowjob voice. I just loved it because I was always like thinking, what is it about Rachel Ray? And I'm like, okay, yeah. Once you said it, I was like, yeah, it's her blowjob voice.
Yeah. Beef That's the jerky, BJ thing. Blowjob. She just, I mean, that show's so stressful. I can't think
she
of anything.
She is stressful.
And she set a precedent for the Food Network to be the most stressful network on television. I don't want to see a meal made in 30 minutes. I don't want to watch a pudgy little Italian woman who can barely reach the counter run around with a clock countdown behind her as if a bomb's going to go off. I mean, they might as well have sniper lights on her head while she's trying to get her EVO. When you have to shorten olive oil, it's a bad show.
And she's like, okay!
Like, and name a meal right now. Name a meal of hers that's been good. Name one.
Oh my
because
god!
Because you can't.
I don't know. Does she even do signature meals? Or is she just like
it's all burnt chicken. I mean, that's
here's how you burn chicken.
She does like lasagna in a mug.
Rachel, no.
I mean, listen, if you were in the 80s and you were in a coma and you woke up and you saw Rachel Ray, you would say, ah, the gremlins. But I mean, it's like, first of all, I just think like cooking is not supposed to be this thing that's supposed to be stressful and get it done fast.
No.
And
no.
I mean, I grew up in a house where my mother forced me, my brother and sister to cook with her every night. Mm. And I loved it. We would make pizza dough. We'd put this together, then it has to rise. And so you wait till it rises and you go back and then it's risen and it's exciting for the kids, or you make meatballs or sauce. I mean, it's supposed to be this thing that's like a cultural pass down, or something that's like full of love, or something that's not supposed to be like
marketed.
Rush through it.
Yes.
Now, are you the kind of Italian that could never set foot in an Olive Garden?
Oh, I've gone to Olive Garden a few times in my life. A few times.
So
I think
not,
that Trump is the Olive Garden of presidents.
There you go. That reads.
That makes sense to me. Dave Mazzone, he won't even go on an Olive Garden.
I mean, I would never choose to go to an Olive Garden. I mean, I'm a snob in all sense when it comes to pizza and good red sauce.
Yes.
I'm a snob when it comes to those.
Sauce.
If you want good pizza, go to Ribalta. It's on 12th Street and Broadway. It's authenticated by the EU and Napolitan government from Italy to be Vera Pizza, which is veramente true pizza. And if they like sell ranch dressing, they're fined $1,000. And it is, and everyone's from Italy.
What's it
there?
Called again?
Ribalta.
Ribalta.
And it's kitty corner to the Strand. Everyone in there is from Italy.
Oh, wait, yeah, of course we've walked past it. Okay, I just want to say one thing. And just, I mean this literally. They don't make him like Matteo Lane anymore. Because you have someone here who like has his values, sticks to them, and they are linked back to a lineage, yeah. A tradition that, you know what, you can't sully. And for the people who do, then they get read for filth. That's beautiful. Matteo, I love that.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice of you.
You know what? Because I feel like a fucking fraud whenever someone's like, what's a great... I mean, first of all, people who come up to me and don't know me and who are like, what's a good dim sum place? I'm like, fuck off. But yeah. I don't know. I know.
But people ask me, what's a good... pizza Italian place.
Sure.
And I say, I say Ribalta.
Yeah.
I also had to seek that when I came to New York because I had my haunts in Chicago.
Right.
Well, every Sunday night was my Aunt Cindy's house. But then we had a place called Fellini, which is the people are from the exact same town in Sicily my grandpa's from.
Oh, wow.
Which is like a 400 people. It's called Montevago, if anyone's been there. And So that was like a place I would go to in Chicago for good red sauce. And it was essentially my family's cooking because we're from the same area of Italy. But when I came to New York, I had to have my good sauce. Yeah. So I had to seek that. There's another good Sicilian place called Piccolo Cucina on Prince and Spring. And it's all Sicilians who work there. And they've got great, it's like a sort of like a tapas, but Sicilian.
Piccolo Cucina, like cute kitchen?
Was that, like was little, that little kitchen.
Little kitchen.
Una piccola cucina.
Yeah, ooh. This is kind of reminding me of how whenever anyone asks me, excuse me, do you know where the nearest McDonald's is? I can always tell them.
But you're Sudi a Greek. And I were literally, you're of Greek descent.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, Mateo, I'm not connected to that Greekness. Like, it's so funny. Like, whenever I'm around Mateo, he's Greeks. Like, Greek, rare Greek, for Greek, Greeks. You're Greek.
And well, his face, when they have drawings, when they have drawings of a Greek profile, those Roman, those different Mediterraneans themselves, from Egypt to Italy,
yes.
share common traits. Yeah. Our eyes, our noses. Mm-hmm. But this face, from the side, is literally what you see in Greek statues.
It's a gold nose.
The flat nose that goes down like this, and then mm-hmm. the chin that comes out like that,
yep.
and then the big almond eyes.
Yes.
I mean, you literally are a Greek face.
I have a very Greek way about me. The thing is, I wish I was more Greek in terms of percentage. I'm like, it's like 40%.
That's pretty and significant.
Then, but like, I wish I could like commit to something. Like, it's not, I'm like arguing with my like own
the thing
background.
Is, I'm culturally half Italian, but I'm really only a quarter.
Oh, okay.
Because the other quarter is Mexican.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then my dad's Irish.
See, but even, like, I don't know any of the Greek language.
Ne, tikanis, skases malaka, madiganis, ne.
I wish.
Oki, malaka.
I wish. I saw My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and I was like, yeah, I get this. And
that
I'm
was
like,
my childhood.
I was like, that's because everyone gets this. But also, like, people that really got it, oh, really got
that
it.
That is my childhood.
That's a great movie.
It's a great movie.
I revisit. Yeah.
My mom's real dad is Mexican, but he left. So here's the story on him. Joaquin Maldonado. I have an uncle who's younger than me because he had so many kids outside of the marriage. Mm. So my mom's one of seven, but actually she's probably one of like 18. But the seven that she knows, five of them are Italian-Mexican. And my grandpa was a hitman in the mafia. So his job, but he was like a low-end guy. So he like if you owed money, he'd break your legs. So he... would like he was such a horrible father. He would leave the house for like months at a time. My mother had a horrible childhood. She was essentially raised by her grandparents from Italy. Mm. But my grandpa had another family and named those kids the same name as my grandma's kids.
Oh my god!
But so he wouldn't confuse them.
Oh my god!
That's insane.
Yes. So my mom, when she was 12, they got a divorce, and then my grandma remarried a Sicilian who's blind, but he's a judge. And he's got a whole other fascinating story.
Oh my God.
So my mom lost all connection to her Mexican grandparents, her cousins, her everyone Mexican in her life. My grandma just shut them out, which is the most unhealthy way to deal with something. But so
that's
technically,
so extreme. That's
well,
I mean,
she and my grandma was. I mean, she was the 50s.
It was an extreme situation. I mean, yeah, two families.
That's what I'm saying. I don't fully blame
my
her.
My mom
either.
Reconnected with her father when she was 30.
Wow.
She sought him, and her sisters sought him, and my grandma, when she found out, was furious.
Ugh.
And they fought real long and hard about that. But my mom sat down with her real dad and asked them every question. Said, you know, she said he owned up to everything.
Wow.
And he apologized. And when he died, they went to his funeral and like nine other brothers and sisters came up to.
With the same names?
Yeah. Because my mom's real last name is Maldonado, uh-huh. which is a Mexican name.
Mexican.
But it's changed to Pomaro when she... And my grandma somehow got her birth certificate changed. That is the most Italian shit I've ever seen in my entire life. My mother's birth certificate changed from Cheryl Maldonado to Cheryl Pomaro. I don't know how the
she
fuck she
done.
Did that.
You can do it.
God bless.
No, they change them. That's insane to meet someone that literally has your name because your father had another family. There's another literal to you to him.
There's
there
another,
was another
Sherry
you.
Maldonado, a Cindy Maldonado, a Deborah Maldonado,
that's
a Joaquin.
Fuck with your head.
And my grandma, I shouldn't be saying anything. My I have an uncle Jack. His birth name is Joaquin Maldonado. My grandma changed it to Jack Pomaro.
God bless this grandmother of yours.
Well, my grandma, you should have her on this show.
What's her culture sound like?
My grandma, well, she wears a house coat. She doesn't stop running. She's 81. She's obsessed with pop culture. You could call my grandma right now. She could tell you anything you want to know about pop culture.
Wow.
She knows everything about sports because my grandpa's blind, so she has to read the sports section to him. So now my grandma knows the trading and all that other stuff. My grandma's fascinating. I talk to my grandparents probably twice a week.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Wait, where's she? She's Chicago.
Chicago?
Yeah. Nice. Beautiful Chicago boy, Mateo Lane. We don't talk about Chicago enough. I feel like you've like fully like left that behind, but is that not fair to say?
No, you're right. In a way,
okay.
I love that I come from Chicago.
Yes,
and Chicago is such a beautiful city, and what an amazing city to grow up in.
Yeah.
I mean, just culturally and everything about it. I went to school there. I went to school at the Art Institute of Chicago.
Prestigious
and very best art school in the country.
Yep. Come on.
Snap.
I almost didn't go to college. I was so horrible in high school.
I hate that holds people back.
What were you like in high school?
High school, I was, every day I would come home and cry. I was made fun of constantly. I was a loser. I was just full of shame. And in therapy, I'm really working. Because the one thing, my biggest thing in life is just needing to be liked by people.
Yeah.
And I had such a struggle with that my entire life that everything from my physical appearance to inside, I am constantly still trying to shed those feelings.
What did they say about you in high school?
Faggot and make fun of me and you laugh at me. And I mean, I knew what hallways to walk and what periods to avoid certain people.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, and I just, I remember, and I tried to do choir, and I tried to do show choir, and I was so, I couldn't handle, I mean, now I have a good sense of humor, and that came from years of, I mean, you know, but it just took such a long time to get over caring what people think about me.
Yeah.
And it's still to this day, it stings. I was in Ohio 2 weeks ago. I called faggot 3 times in a day.
God.
And
just
I was wearing a boa. But I mean,
while you were on stage?
I was going to Starbucks. I got what was called a drive-by faggot. So I'm standing there, and it just sounded like, faggot. And I know.
It really hurts. It sticks with you so much. In fact, I'm not going to lie. A lot of the way that I've chosen to dress over the past 5 or 6 years are subconsciously always in my mind. I'm like, well, I don't want to be called faggot. So I can't wear this.
Yes.
I mean, that is something that gay people think about that and I'm sure women deal with, obviously.
In a different way,
though. What am I going to wear? Exactly. With gay men, it's different than it is with women.
It's specifically
like, how can I butch up, and I always say this, I always make fun of the Hell's Kitchen gays about this, but I'm guilty of it too. How can I best dress up like the guys that made fun of me in high school so that I look like them so they won't target me today?
I have a group of friends that I found over the past year that they're not comedy related, except Bob, but like they're just so wonderfully, like my friend Patty.
Bob the drag queen. Yeah.
My friend Patty is, I'm like, my heart swells when I think of Patty. Mm. He's 5'5", long red hair, walks around the winter. He lives in Washington Heights and has a giant fur coat.
Yes.
And doesn't give a shit and smokes and just, what cold? I mean, he,
what
I mean,
cold?
they're just living their,
it's
that's
truth.
Like my inspiration for, you know, it's so funny. Okay, how much time do we have?
Plenty.
We have time.
I was talking about this today with my therapist about how when I'm on stage, I'm still struggling. Like last night I did Hartford, Connecticut. So the majority of the audience doesn't know who I am, and they are straight.
Rich,
I mean, I perform
straight
for straight people every single night. And I'm still coming out of the closet.
Right.
I'm still dealing with my sexuality. Ugh. And you know what's crazy? I've technically done 2 late night sets.
Yes.
Only one of them aired.
Oh, yes!
I did.
I know about this.
This fills me with rage every time I'm reminded of this.
2 years ago, I did a late night set, and we will not name who it is, because I guess that's the appropriate thing to do. And for 2 months, you know, they call you first and say, we want to work with you and get you on late night. I said, awesome. And then you work out your material and blah, 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 blah. And we figured out a set. We've gotten down perfectly, sent in the transcripts and
pick out what you're wearing.
Yes. Oh, yes. I am like have a knot in my stomach saying this story right now. And it's not a pity me, but it's a whatever. I did the show. I flew out. I filmed it. Mm-hmm. I did the show, and then they say we'll air it like a week later. Mm-hmm. 2 days later, I got a call from the producer, and she said that in the way she, I could find her finding her words.
Oh,
I could hear her finding her words.
It's the worst.
She, my opening joke was I sing opera, and then I say that's how it came out to my dad. And she goes, well, we love your first joke. We'll say his name is Tom. Tom loves your first joke, but we think that you will, you should just stray away from that for the rest of the set. And I said, what do you mean?
That?
The set's already taped.
Yeah, and she goes, well, no, they wanted me to come back to refilm it.
Oh, my God.
And I said, okay. I said, well, what, you know, can I, and I knew where this was going.
Yeah.
So I was testing her. So I said, well, can I talk about dating? Well, we would, you know, I think that we would just feel comfortable if you just, you know, we want to see the fun Mateo. We want to just see the different side of Mateo, you know, and let's not hit the same point over and over again.
Fun for them.
And I said, well, can I talk to my brother? You know, I just feel that Tom thinks that it would really be in our best interest if we would just avoid that topic. Let's get it out up front and then let's just move on to other things. And so I called my manager and her and I got into a fight. And then I said, no. I'm not gonna do it.
No way.
And it sent me into, here's why I'm happy it happened. Strangely enough, one, a year later on August 25th, the exact same day I did Seth Meyers.
Yeah.
Who had,
wow,
the same day. And no one had any, they were so wonderful. They were like, do whatever you want. I mean, right. I got not a single note. They said, do whatever the fuck you want.
It's a great set.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, thank you. But yes, it was great that I could say what I wanted to. But at the time, like I think I think it was, how long ago? It was August 25th, not that time,
yeah,
but
it's like 10 months
year and a half ago.
Yeah, yeah.
I was in such a bad place mentally. Mm. I think as a comic, I got a lot early. And it swells your head with the wrong idea of what's important. Mm-hmm. And so at that time.
Succeeding earlier in your career.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. At that time, the focus was credits mean everything. Credits mean everything.
Yep,
this means everything. And I became obsessed. And when that thing happened with Tom and that late show, I crumbled because I didn't know what was important to
me. Replacing a lot on that.
And it was also dealing with everything from my sexuality to my identity to everything about high school. I mean, all those demons came back up.
Right, but at that point, it's like, that's on them. That's not necessarily on you thinking, credits mean everything, but it's absolutely, you got that success
based on
your merit alone.
It's on them, but they're in power, and that's what's frustrating, and that's the unique predicament of it. It's like, I know this is wrong, and you know what? I can tell in the timbre of your voice that you know this is wrong.
Oh, yes.
And yet we're still doing this. This woman knew she was wrong, and Tom knows he's wrong.
I actually think, though, because what's funny is, like, right after that, I had gotten a ton of road work with Lisa Traeger.
Mm-hmm.
And so every weekend, her and I were out on the road, and she's like a Russian immigrant refugee tough cunt. And she did not let me feel sorry for myself. She really helped me focus, and other people too in my life, obviously. But Lisa was a main factor of, now I feel so different. I feel like my main focus is the most important thing are relationships and nurture the friends in your life that really mean something to you because that's the most important thing. And number two, care about what you're talking about on stage. Being on stage, care about the things you're saying. Care about make sure the work is good. Mm-hmm. Everything else, it doesn't matter. Because, you know, Lisa brought up a good point to me, too, because a lot of people get stuff, or someone gets this, or someone gets that, and it's, you know, Lisa goes, the Macarena was a hit at one time.
Yeah.
Now, you know, is this a race, or are we in it for the long run? You know, I plan on doing this the rest of my life. So I don't care if so-and-so does this, or if so-and-so does that. I'm still doing this.
Yep.
And that was something that never occurred to me, and so I think the past year has been a huge shift in my perspective mentally of what is important to me and what the outlook on life should be. But I mean, even like, I think when I met you, probably, I mean, I was in that mentality, and I can see some other comedians now who are in that mentality, and it's a prison.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I'm better for it, but I still struggle with these things,
but
at least I'm working hard to move past it.
I think it's more difficult for you guys in the stand-up world. I really do. I think that's why you see a lot of comedians coming out later in life. A lot of people that are doing stand-up right now that are closeted, that are very successful.
I know a very famous
closeted
gay comedian.
I think, yeah, the same one. Yes. But But the thing is, I think in the world of sketch and in the world of improv and the kind of like UCB community, it's more insulated. So that is one thing, is you feel like, ooh, I'm not really getting what it's like to perform for like an audience of people in Midtown like you are. But it also feels more safe. I mean, it's very safe for the gay community. And I think it's very safe for the most part for women and for, you know, racial minorities. But then you take one step out and it's the stand-up world and it is more vicious. Audiences are more unforgiving.
Yeah, people, I think some comedians, some non-stand-up comedians see the way I behave sometimes towards audiences and think that I am, like, vicious, like spitting venom sometimes. But listen, girl, there are four stand-up gay men doing it in the city.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And only two of us doing clubs. And first of all, like, Joel. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't ever see Joel. Right. And the reason is you can't put two gay people on the same lineup, which sucks.
Yep.
Because then I don't get a chance to see my friends. So Joel and I never see each other.
Two totally different sets.
Two completely different people. And, you know, people can't disassociate the gay thing.
Yeah.
They see me and Joel and say, they're both gay. We're going to hear the same thing. Don't book them.
Oh.
And so Joel and I never see each other. And I'm literally out sometimes in a true. I've been chased out by Turkish guys, four Turkish guys who called me a faggot at a show.
Oh my God.
Well, it was 1 o'clock in the morning. And of course, listen, stand ups are not soft people. You know, my friends are, these people are, there are some.
So you got into it with them?
Oh, yes. I said, really? I said, I'm the faggot. I'm pretty sure it's 1 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, and I'm seeing four men together at a table and not a woman to be found watching a gay man perform on stage. Who's the faggot now? They chased me out. I had to go through the kitchen to get out.
Jesus
Christ. I've been heckled at most shows. I'm heckled. Most shows, people say something gay, something homophobic, something. Oh, and every night I get on stage and I say, who is gay? And maybe a hand goes up. So I'm performing, but gay men also
different.
Don't.
That's different from what we experience.
Gay men do not. And listen, don't no sad song for me. No, I love my life, and I love these shows.
You got
stuff.
More money than us, too,
but,
bitch.
Well, that's up for debate. But you know, like, gay men also have a real problem with gay men performing. That's not in drag or not a go-go boy.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that.
Well, Joel and I actually just, Joel texted me the other day. We were chit-chatting about that because, I mean, I did an AIDS event once in Chicago and got booed off the stage.
God. I can't.
Well, I let them have it.
Well, I hope so.
I performed at a place that used to be called Manhole. Secondly, I was doing this show. It was a benefit for AIDS, and they would have like crochet jock straps on porn stars, and then they had the porn stars go up first, so there's sex for 15 minutes, and then they did an intermission, and then they all come back, and then they go, okay, now comedy, and I go on stage. I'm on stage for 2 minutes. Struggling to get anyone's attention.
Yeah.
No one's listening to me. And so I said, is anyone going to listen? And this one guy yells. He goes, yeah, we'll listen if you put on a jock strap. And so then I go off. Then I say, oh, I get it. Because I'm not Kathy Griffin or the ghost of Joan Rivers. You assholes don't give a shit about me. I said, but you won't support your own performers, but you'll support that Weekend at Bernie's in Vegas called Britney Spears. And then they started booing. But then I doubled down. I was like, and Christina's a cunt, and I'm sure you're all masked tops, and you can all fuck off. And I did 6 minutes and was... The sound of 200 gay men booing you is what I'll never forget.
Wow.
And I get off stage and I walk and I go into the green room where there's seven porn stars staring at me like I made the wrong choices in life. I mean, it was a night.
I was thinking yesterday, actually, about why RuPaul's Drag Race is such a sensation. It's one of the only ways that gay men can become stars. Think about that. Like, there are very few gay men who are like actual stars. I mean, you got Neil Patrick Harris, you got Matt Bomer, and then like whatever, you could list the rest. And they're becoming more, but that's because they're so fucking incredibly hot. They're Instagram, like you call them, lobotomy fags.
Lobotomy fag.
What's a lobotomy fag?
Just those Instagram models, Mateo, you know these people that are so dumb. they've come from a lobotomy.
Yeah.
Wait,
you know what's so funny is like I have a whole joke on this right now where it's like gay men are, first of all, they don't even give gay roles to gay people. They give those to straight people.
Yep, it's
and
so
number two,
frustrating.
Our only other options are robots. Every robot's been gay. First of all, C-3PO. R2's a lesbian. She came with a tool belt. Wall-E listened to the Barbra Streisand version of Hello, Dolly.
Oh, my God.
And Michael Fassbender, an alien. And Gay. Ash from the original Alien died in a bukkake. I mean, that's our only options. Is we're robots.
You saw the new Alien where he kisses himself?
Just
so stupid.
Awful.
So stupid.
But I loved it, but awful.
I loved it, too, but Joel and I saw it together, and we were like, we hate this
movie.
We love this.
It was an awful movie. I saw it with Amber Nelson. And
I would have paid to see to watch it with both of you.
First of all, when you want to go to a scary movie, you go with Amber Nelson. Because literally, one time we went to go see Annabelle. Remember that dumb movie about the fucking doll?
Yeah. So, no.
Amber taught. And it gets real quiet, right? And like, and Amber in a full theater will just go, oh, fuck. I mean, she gets so into it. It's great.
I can hear that. Just okay, but no, it's like what you were just saying, Matt, and what Mateo was just saying, and it's what Guy Branum says all the time. It's that. Unless you're a drag queen, a go-go boy, or a fucking porn star, gay men do not care about it.
Now, and that's so frustrating.
Let me just say, I think through my experience so far, and I think it's like me and James Adomian, who's been putting in the work for a long time.
Yeah.
Guy Branum, Julio, Joel, you know, in the world of stand-up. I'm just talking stand-up specific here. We are putting in the work, and I hope that we're being shown, you know, like late night sets and half hours and specials. And it's
and
slowly
jobs.
Becoming more acceptable. And I'm finding that audiences are also more open to hearing about my life and curious.
Yes.
And I find that a lot of men do not know gay people in their lives that they're friends with. And I'm opening a door for these people to show them a little bit into our world and to also hopefully show that we're more alike than we are different. I try to bridge that gap as much as I can in my stand-up. But
you're an ambassador to them. You're an ambassador to them. And then you, Guy, Joel, James, you know, Julio, John, you guys are blazing the trail. It's beautiful to see. It really is.
And I think the good thing, too, is all of us are friends.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we may not talk every day, but I love these people. Tim Dillon is a big one.
Tim, of course.
And Frank Liotti. You know, there's a group of us who are doing it, and they're not doing it in just the gay scene. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Totally.
But we're, I mean... Yeah, it's great. And a lot of times, you know, I got criticism from older comics when I first came out because I was getting a lot. And people would say, oh, how did you find your voice so quickly? And I said, well, gay people were forced to find our voices when we were 13 years old.
Yeah.
We were suffering from demons, and you're talking about staples. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's a different thing. It's a different thing.
You had to just develop that sensibility as a defense mechanism.
Yes.
You really did. That's what Patty Harrison says all the time, and I really think about that a lot. Wait, I just want to go back to this whole Tom debacle, but I remember like in the weeks leading up to that first set recording, the three of us were at Kellogg's Diner in Williamsburg.
Mm-hmm.
We were in this section, and we had a waitress with the goofiest fucking voice
and the worst mac and cheese.
And the worst mac and cheese.
Oh my God,
do you remember this waitress?
I remember her.
Does she talk like that? Like, she... Okay.
It was really.
Okay, you want the mac and cheese?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then she flew through a wall.
No, I don't think she ever said a legible, like not legible, an
audible,
intelligible.
Yeah, intelligible.
You know what I mean? I don't think that there was ever a moment where I really was confident in knowing what she was saying.
No.
And it wasn't
and
a language
was
thing. It was. I want to say it was not a language thing. It was a specific
just the
voice.
The voice.
Oh, okay.
It was just.
Yeah,
Beaker. It was Beaker from the Muppets.
Wow, I'm so happy you brought that back into.
I remember that,
and
I remember we ordered mac and cheese without bacon. They brought bacon,
and they brought bacon, and with like little cheese
and
shredded.
I didn't want it.
Also, don't order the mac and cheese at Kellogg's Diner, you guys. It's literally it's
so bad.
It's
and Lisa one time was like, "You said it was the best in the city." I was like, "You obviously heard me wrong," and I have multiple eyewitnesses to prove
me
otherwise.
It's bottom of the barrel bad. It's like literally like what you get at like the fucking Duane Reade.
There you go. We can corroborate this for Mateo on behalf of Mateo. To Lisa, Mateo, Matt, and I hated it.
I wouldn't even talk about Maria Callas. I love this whole thing.
No, we can talk about
Maria
Callas.
No, I don't want to take up your guys' time. I feel like I'm wasting everyone's time.
No,
let's talk for a second about Maria Callas. It doesn't have to be the lecture. I mean, in order to see the lecture on...
You have to be with Mateo.
On Maria Callas, you have to seek out Mateo.
Sit with me.
Single.
Pay $800 for an 8-week class. On
Murakos 201.
201.
Yeah.
Okay, so give us like the primer.
Abridged.
The abridged
Tell
version.
Us who she was, because the children are not going to know who Maria Callas is. Tell us who
Briefly,
she was, that's
I'll
enough.
Just, I'll keep it very brief. Okay. Maria Callas was an opera singer, American-born, Greek descent, moved back to Greece during the war, had to learn at the conservatoire in Greece and sell things to the black market in order to keep her family alive.
That's my favorite part
she
about it.
She also went in when she was supposed to be 18. She was a big girl, so she lied. She was 13. She learned early. She learned from a coloratura soprano, and Maria had a big, heavy voice, but she learned, it's almost like Avatar The Last Airbender, like firebenders who learn waterbending moves. Uh-huh. It's like she was a firebender who learned waterbending and was more fluid.
That's amazing.
Pavarotti also learned how to breathe from a coloratura soprano, and that's why he was so fluid in his
oh.
singing.
Oh.
He learned from Joan Sutherland. She taught him how to breathe. That's why Pavarotti could do trills, which a man to do trills is like, that's
oh
insane.
A man trilla?
She was a big fat singer.
Ooh, I love
had
a big fat
singer. Huge range, could sing anything for the female voice. Mm-hmm. And she married this old fart named Meneghini, who was this Italian businessman. And then she lost 100 pounds in less than a year.
Wow.
And became the fashion icon of the world, and had
Jennifer Hudson,
and had but, like it, yes, but she had a lot of
and
controversy in her life. She had
a lot
of controversy in her life. She left her husband for Onassis, and they had an affair, and then she left her career, and then, you know, she got thrown out of the Rome Opera one night, and this whole hubbub, and then she, Onassis destroyed her, because then she married Onassis, she stopped singing, so she lost all the great muscles for opera that you need, and then she got pregnant by him, and he said, you have me or the baby, so she had an abortion, then he married Jacqueline Kennedy behind her back, after she got an abortion for him, then she went back and did Tosca, and it was a success, but then she just sort of shriveled in her French apartment, her Paris apartment, and when Onassis died, she barely left her apartment again for the rest of her life and died at age 53 in 1977.
No. Oh, this has to be
movie?
A story we all know.
Is there a movie? Why is it
they were going to do a movie of Masterclass, which I don't like that play because it doesn't represent who Maria Callas was, because she did teach Masterclass at Juilliard, and I've listened to all of them, and she is a musical genius.
Wow.
Genius.
Who would you cast in the role of Maria Callas?
Someone who's Mediterranean Greek looking.
Okay.
They wanted Meryl Streep is not...
She's not...
Maria is known not... I mean, the physicality of her is really important because she had... giant eyes, giant nose. She was beautiful,
Bold
but she
features.
Was just this total Mediterranean woman.
Yeah.
And you can't get someone with soft features in there.
You need like a young Liza, maybe. I don't know.
I have the same eyes as Liza Minnelli.
And they're beautiful, like just giant.
Sleepy.
Just, no, but they're not, they're just slanted in this gorgeous way. It's
Mine
just like,
slant down like this, which is
which is Liza.
It's, yeah, it's a Southern Italian trait.
I love it.
People in Southern Italy, we all have the same eyes. Our eyes go down like this. They wrap around like that, and it's a heavy eyelid. And people always think I'm high or tired. Like, are you tired? And I have to say, I'm wide awake. This is just how I look.
This is just how I look.
Resting.
Wait,
resting
who?
Sleeping.
I don't. I have. I can't even think of an actress that fits that.
I'm sure there's someone.
There's got to be someone, but not off the top of my head, I can't think.
You need someone strong. You know, Maria. And Maria was a total diva, by the way. I mean, when she was interviewed, they're like, what do you think of your rivals? And she goes, oh, I don't mean to correct you, but I don't have rivals.
Ah!
I mean, she was quite a diva. She basically started how the way we sort of look at these glamorized divas.
I love that.
Very similar to Judy Garland, and just the operatic Judy Garland.
Sure.
Not drug addicted, though.
There you go. Oh, I was listening.
But lost her voice.
Oh, yeah,
and
right.
There's a video of her singing Non Più Mesta, and this is in 1962, and she was trying to come back. She could sing at a mezzo voice. She did a recording of Carmen. So her voice with Carmen was great because it's just for a mezzo-soprano.
Yeah.
But when she tried to get back into those coloratura, quick embellishments, there's a video of her, and she was doing some good chromatic scales down. At the very end, she tries to go up. I think the note was only like an F, and she had this giant wobble to her voice, literally like it was bad to watch her voice just plummet.
So awful that this seems to happen a lot with these like
not Patty,
but like it's so frustrating that it seems to happen a lot. Like very few of them seem happy.
John Early and I talked about this in depth one day, and we decided that we like it. Because, hear me out.
We need tragic figures.
Hear me out. Maria, Whitney,
Judy
are a big flash that goes out quickly.
home.
Whereas someone like Beyonce is just consistently good. But Beyonce is not that same Whitney whoosh, you know, sure. Like just like you hear her singing, you think, you know, and like and this tragedy. Beyonce is just so good at everything, uh-huh. But it's not the same, like,
poof. Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
John really said it's got to be something about that flash. When Maria Callas is the same way, when she sang, no one had ever heard a voice go above an E at full voice. No one had ever heard a mezzo studio coloratura. No one ever heard a singer who can act. No one ever heard of a fashion. No, all these things she was doing, this yeah. big flash in the pan, and then sets the standard for the rest of everyone else in that career, but then just done.
Wow. I mean, I think there is something to that, to what you and John were saying, because I think it's like, when the flash happens and everyone starts getting in on it, they're like, we're in on this while it's happening. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe there is something to that where it's like, we're witnessing this. It's not, it might not last forever. Yeah.
And we're witnessing something new.
Yeah.
I'm witnessing something that's never been heard before. You know, that's the crazy thing you have to explain to people is the sounds you hear from singers today come from singers like Judy yes. and Barbara.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like Barbara in the 60s, no one had ever heard someone sing like that before. Yep. She was doing shows in men's clothing with Egyptian eye makeup, long fingernails, eating baked potatoes on the stage, and speaking French and Italian to the audiences, and then singing like you wouldn't even believe.
I love
and
that.
People didn't know that sound.
I love
they
that.
Never heard that sound before.
Is
but
there
now
anyone
we hear
who's coming close today for you? Is there anyone doing anything new?
It's okay.
Jennifer Hudson blows me away when I listen to her sing, but she's not that magnetic personality. She's a bit of a dud.
She's gotten better, I think, at really believing what she sings. Like, I just saw her do a performance on The Voice, and it was a shit song. It was like, it was a song, some stupid song. I don't even know what it was called. It was something like, I remember me. You know, it was like stupid.
I think the producers are more important than the artists now.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then that need for that type of singer doesn't exist anymore.
It's a shame because, you know, you give her material where she can really show her gift and like everyone's blown away. I mean, but also that's a frustrating story because Jennifer Hudson, famous for Dreamgirls, when you really go back and you watch the Jennifer Holliday performance on the Tonys.
Oh.
That's
far and away
that's,
the best
that's
one.
A true that's a true moment in time.
That is untouchable.
Oh my
yeah,
goodness.
I mean, it's so brilliant. And that's the thing is, like, no one has the opportunity to do that.
You know who I
nowadays.
Love is a singer. I'm going to play 2 seconds of her voice because I think you'll really like it. I love singers that are – I'm so Italian. I love singers that I have to – it has to be so extreme. And that's why I love Mariah because it's this extreme superhuman.
As high as you can get.
There is a singer named Cleo Lane who's now in her 80s. Oh. And she's British, but she's half Jamaican. So she's got this beautiful fro hair and this like sort of deep, deep olive skin. And she has this weird sound. She's a jazz singer. Weird sound of her voice, a very muffled sort of sound to her voice as she sings about down here. But she has a 5-octave range.
Whoa.
So this is an example. I'll just play some No, wait. This is just like her normal voice. Like you'll hear like the low sound. 1 second.
Yes.
Very kind of like
almost like Shirley Bassey.
Sulfuric.
Yeah.
And then the very end.
Okay.
Crazy.
Cleo Lane?
Cleo Lane, Laine.
Oh, I was going to say, maybe she's related.
That was a Teach the Children moment.
Teach the Children. Yes, guys, get on Cleo
Lane. Go look up her music. She's got these.
She's in her 80s now.
She's in her 80s. She still sounds good.
Amazing.
She said she'll stop singing when she gets a wobble, and she hasn't gotten a wobble yet.
Wait, I just want to bring this up. Today I listened to some old Judy. I think Cottage for Sale. She does this live version of it. It's so good. It's so good.
What did you think of the Tonys last night?
I didn't watch them.
Yeah. Did you?
No, I was on a bus. Sorry.
Judy I know. I mean, honestly, there was nothing that happened. I can't believe Bette Midler did not perform. I can't believe she did not perform. It's so frustrating.
Well, she's up there. I mean, she's...
Yeah, she's up there, but she's doing it every night.
I guess.
It's not about age. It's entirely about they didn't want to work it out or money or ego or whatever, and That's the one night a year you have to show the rest of the world what's happening on Broadway, to sell it, because it people need to save it from going under.
Well, I told her I would go sing for it. But she said no.
Liza, they sent David Hyde Pierce in your steed.
Stead.
Well, that faggot.
Ah!
No, who are the singers that make you cry? Because the only singers that can make me cry are Judy.
Okay.
Specifically a performance of her singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow when she was in the hobo outfit in like 1961. And Maria Callas. Those are the only two singers that make me cry.
Oh, wow, boy.
This is very difficult.
Female singers?
Any singer.
Okay, this is such a lame answer, but like not just because of his cover of Hallelujah. Jeff Buckley.
Mm-hmm.
He has this whole live set from this venue called Cine. It's beautiful. And then, God, maybe Celine.
I love Celine.
I love Celine. Celine can stir up any emotion in me. What about you, Matt?
I think that Celine certainly makes me feel many emotions. Mm-hmm. I think she's one of the most emotional singers we've ever had.
And it is all for you.
Yes, and it is. And we accept it.
I saw you.
And yeah. I think that she's definitely a good answer. I am very touched by Whitney. And honestly, like...
Home, Merv Griffin Show. Her first...
Yeah, was she saying Home?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I will say, you know who... Speaking of Home, the Diana Ross performance of Home actually...
It's amazing.
Really makes me very emotional.
It's amazing.
She really told the story for me.
And that was her at her best.
Honestly, the last time I cried at a singer, and I really don't cry too much to music, I feel in other ways. I kind of get up on my feet and move around. Like, that's kind of how I deal with my emotion when I'm really moved. Or I'll
cry at a Folgers coffee commercial.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a crier. I'm like a mover. I have to get up on my feet when I feel the spirit. But I cried when Kelly Clarkson sang on The Last American Idol.
That's beautiful.
I do love her.
Yeah.
Oh,
and I
love
sometimes
her.
Cry to a really, sorry about it, honest-to-God country singer.
Enya.
Any country singer that can really plant their feet.
Well,
and give it.
I'll always like, sing.
But then again, I also think that's the lyrics. I think I think I'm very susceptible to a good storytelling song and really honestly delivered lyrics. And that's honestly something I think about myself is I really respond to lyrical content.
And storytelling.
Like, and that, to me, has to go hand in hand with the vocal performance.
Mitch, did you just pull that melody out of your ass?
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Okay, let's move on to...
We got to do I Don't Think So, Honey.
Here we go.
So just so you know, guys, if you're just tuning in, good episodes are just tuning in on, y'all. We do a little thing called I Don't Think So, Honey. We take 1 minute to rail against culture. Something that's, you know, just not right with us. Just not sitting right with us.
Yep.
So Bowen Yang, he shocked me today when he came in and said that he has one.
Oh, yes.
Because usually not super prepared for this. God love him.
Thank you.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. And I'm not saying it's just because it's prepared it's going to be coherent, but we're going to go with it.
That's fine.
Okay.
And Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, Facebook.com for putting a 24-hour ban on me posting and liking shit because someone reported me for posting a photo in front of the White House yesterday during the Equality March with pride flags everywhere, with just, you know, anti-Trump signs. I captioned this photo, Fag Power, hashtag Equality March. Someone decided to report it for offensive language, so it was taken down. And look, it's not an automatic thing. Someone at Facebook, some fucking 25-year-old dipshit wearing C glasses at Facebook headquarters in Menlo Park, California, saw this post, saw this report, decided it was okay to give me a ban. I don't think so, honey, Facebook.com. I don't think so, honey, you bigots. I hope you bleed out of your fucking assholes for all I care. You don't like gay people. This is not the month to do it. On the day of the Orlando the Orlando shooting of all days, have some respect,
Five.
You pieces of shit. You're done. I hate you. Move out of this country. I don't think so, honey.
Whoa.
I'm sorry. That got really real. I feel this so strongly. And I'm mad at Facebook. And today I was like, honestly, like, I don't think I need this.
Do you know I have not posted on Facebook, I think, in a solid year. I don't go on Facebook.
Thank God.
Yeah,
I don't
need it. Although, Bowen, while you were speaking, a thought occurred to me. I wouldn't have been surprised if it was a gay that did that. I wouldn't have been surprised if it was. Because I was thinking, I don't know. You guys, it's a year since Pulse. I think that today, it's Pride Month. I think Pride Month is amazing. It's an amazing time to be proud. But I also think it's a really good time to look within and check ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think what you were saying before is really a thing. And gay people are cruel to each other. And I think it's great that we can all rally together for something like remembering Pulse and in the wake of Pulse and stuff like that. And I think Pride Month is really is more important now than ever, but I will say that that thought occurred to me.
Okay.
That someone could have seen the word fag, because there's a lot of people in the gay community that just don't want us saying it at all,
guess,
or like have limits on people saying it. I'm sure in every community.
I'm gonna name
like
my album "Faggots Revisited."
Yeah,
because it's that Eddie Murphy track.
Yeah,
I don't know. It just occurred to me. Sometimes I'm looking for homophobia from within as well.
Oh, there's
and
it's,
I
it's
think
absolutely
we need to,
there.
We need to do that. And like, I love our community. I love it. I'm just saying. And you know what it is? It's whenever Drag Race winds down, I think about this because they're so fucking cruel to those people.
Oh,
like,
Drag Race
these trolls, these like young gays who don't get it.
I'm sure
really
people...
young gays, and also young straight people who watch the show just because it's fun that don't get it.
You know, I went to DragCon, and it was predominantly straight women who were there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The I mean, there were a lot of gay men, but there was a lot of straight women
young
there.
Young straight women love Drag Race.
Yeah, I was blown away by that.
But I'm sure Bob has gone through the same sort of hateful speech. I mean, it's just, you put yourself out there and people...
Yeah, we've had some talks.
...want to tear you down. Oh, yeah, and even you've gone through this, but anyway.
I was talking about Bob. Yeah, I mean, like, I get it. The first comment I ever got when I was on Guy Code was, get this faggot off MTV. That was
the
first tweet I got.
Awful, awful, awful. And, you know, this comment, I don't know why it stays with me, but Matt and I shot a video with Comedy Central one time. Some asshole commented.
Never read the comments.
Never read the comments. I know. I've learned this, and I truly don't anymore. But like, because of this shit, like someone said, would be better without Asian faggot.
Yeah,
thank
listen,
you so much.
And you know what, Bowen? That is that person's problem.
Of course,
And I know. Listen, I'm only speaking from experience.
Mm-hmm.
You really, the more you guys are both super talented, and you guys are both going to be very successful. And especially for you, people are going to be making racist comments.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned it from Joan 3 years ago. She was in an interview, and I've stuck to it. She goes, if you're saying something negative, you're wasting your time. I'm not looking. Go ahead. Write all you want. Not looking.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, yeah, because you know what? You'll never win. You'll never, ever, ever get everybody on your side.
Mm.
The best you can do is live your life. And the best that you can do is be the true person that you can be. Listen, at the end of the day, you have two options. One, you do what you want to do. You express yourself how you want to express yourself. Or two, don't and crawl into a hole and hide away from the world because you're afraid that someone's not going to like you.
Mm-hmm.
So listen, you're doing the right thing.
Mm.
And people are going to say all these awful, horrible things. Don't look. Don't look.
I could cry right now. It's thank you, Mateo. That's okay. All right.
If you can't love yourself,
how in the hell are you going to love somebody else?
Well, you just get some pills.
Liza, no.
I feel shitty that I even have to do an I Don't Think So Honey right now, but I'm going to continue to come for the community in my I Don't Think So Honey. Here we go.
Matt Rogers, I Don't Think So Honey. This is a very self-critical I Don't Think So Honey.
I'm looking within a lot these days. Been through a lot.
Here we go. And time starts now.
I Don't Think So Honey Reddit. Bitch, you finally got me. I went on there and I know everything that happens in that fucking finale of Drag Race.
Oh.
And I am so upset with myself. But you know what? I also blame a lot of my friends who dangle and dangle and dangle the Reddit info in front of me. And then you know what? I'm a curious motherfucking cat. And I have to look. I went and I looked and there was more revealed than I wanted it to be revealed. And let me tell you, I'm gagged. But also, I'm disappointed because I know. And I'm thinking to myself, fuck, with these Reddits, I Don't Think So Honey, with all these spoiler websites, with our, like, television culture nowadays, nothing can be enjoyed in the moment. And it's made the way I watch TV different. I Don't Think So Honey. Reddit sites like you and you people on Reddit who don't put the spoiler at least ban over the words, and you know I'm going to touch it, but just put it there.
5 seconds.
Follow the rules, bitch, all you Reddit users. I hope that you don't enjoy anything ever again.
And
I Don't
that's
Think
one
So Honey.
Minute. Matt, you gotta stay off Reddit just for any...
Listen.
I don't even know how to use Reddit.
It's first of all, it's horrible to navigate. And then you get
it's
in
like
there...
It's like Snapchat.
I don't
sure.
know. I'll never do it again.
And people on the Drag Race subreddit are vicious.
They're horrible.
Speaking of horrible...
Yeah,
horrible.
Ginger was sharing some of the things she was reading on Reddit. I was like, Ginger, why are you reading that?
Yeah, oh no, she's got to get off. People are terrible to her.
Well, I didn't even know it existed, but she found a really funny meme someone made of her and I was running after her with a snowball.
Because so you cute. Never think it's going to be you, I'm sure.
Totally.
Like,
totally.
I'm sure I'm on there. I'm sure of it.
Who knows? The thing is, like, when you're a queen that gets on Drag Race, you think, oh my God, my life's going to change. You think, there's no way I'm going to be the villain, right? And then you fucking become the villain. And also, yeah, like, it is based on shit that you do, but it's also a drag competition, and you're supposed to be shady and a bitch.
It's fine. It's
Yeah, people don't really get what drag is.
They don't think they do. Especially the young girls that love it.
There you go.
Yeah. That's
okay.
Hard.
Okay, it's time for Mateo.
Oh God, now I feel like I don't have this.
I think what you told us before the show, you don't have to do that one, but what you told us before we started recording, I thought was perfect. But you can do anything you want.
Oh my God. Okay. suddenly I'm so stressed out. I'll try that, but I can't do the same energy level.
Don't.
As you guys.
It's fine.
Okay. 4, 3.
Mateo,
two.
I don't think so. Honey, time starts now.
I don't think so, Kellyanne Conway. And here's the thing, as I know that she's like Mika from Morning Joe, which is one of my favorite shows to watch, always says that she's like political porn, that these pundits bring her on and just have her argue, go in these circles. I just think that we'd be better off if we could put her in season one of Fox's The Swan, a show where they took 19 women who honestly needed a blowout and a new like jacket, but forced them to, if the months of invasive plastic surgery and shielded them from their families and mirrors, and then made them look exactly like the host of the show, and then force them into a beauty pageant with the other women. I just think that the only reason Kellyanne Conway could do it is because, one, get her and those bags you could smuggle children in with under her eyes, and just fix that face, and then, two, we could hide. She could be out of our lives for at least 6 months, and then she can come back, and at least we could, you know, look at her. So that's it. So I just don't think so, Kellyanne Conway.
There you go. That's 1 minute.
Oh my God. That was how they were putting women on television at
I
that
can't
time.
Believe
that
horrible.
That
Swan. Show is so horrible, but I would have watched 18 seasons of it.
Have you heard about this Bachelor in Paradise garbage?
No.
So there was sexual misconduct. Apparently, like, there could have been a sexual assault on the show, and Bachelor in Paradise is now canceled. They were filming for 1 day, and the contestants got so fucking wasted that, like, something bad happened, and they had to pull it, and I'm like, well, what do you think?
What did you expect?
This is literally rape culture on television. It's been like that.
I do, you know, literally the only shows that I watch on TV, I wake up every morning, I put on Morning Joe, I make my coffee. I don't know why I like that show. I listen to Howard Stern. I watch The View.
Howard.
I watch Wendy Williams. Mm-hmm. And then that's it. I watch Zelda stuff on YouTube.
I've been watching Zelda stuff on YouTube too. And
like,
it's like
99 things you didn't know about this game, 17 things you didn't know about this game. Yep.
Like fucking, like,
snowboarding on your shield.
Snowboarding on your shield. Do you watch that video where it's like, here's Lon Lon Ranch from Ocarina of Time?
Yes, and it's the exact same.
It's the exact same layout, and it's creepy as hell.
So this is the exact same conversation that was happening before when I was like, we got to start the episode.
I watched game run-throughs of people beating my favorite games from when I was a kid. They beat it like in an hour, and there's like a bunch of people around them, and then like it's for like some cancer benefit or something.
You guys are for real.
Oh, I love it.
There's something about this. Mateo, you have a show to go to after this, but anytime you want. This summer, come over. I got my Switch, so we can play Mario Kart. We can play this new game, Arms.
I also would just love to sit and play Zelda.
Please, Zelda. And I would watch you play Zelda.
Vice versa. Okay, good. That's my favorite thing, is to watch. When I grew up, all my cousins, my cousin Michael was the oldest, so he would play the video games, and me and all my other cousins would sit and watch him play video. And it's one of my favorite things to still do today.
It's fantastic. I think
you guys at home can all come too, and me and you guys will go smoke a bowl in the next room while they play.
There you go.
Everyone listening is invited. Guys, we've had such an amazing episode.
Guys, thank you so
Mateo.
I really am. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Thank you so much for being on.
Truly
of
a
course.
Light. Really, seriously.
Oh,
one of the
thanks.
Most talented people that we know. And,
oh, well.
And a
we love you
good
so
friend.
Much.
And thank
great
you so
friend.
Much for coming.
Thank you.
This
we,
is, that's Matt
love
Rogers.
That. And that's Bowen Yang over there.
That's Mateo Lane. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Forever. Dog. This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Joe Cilio, Alex Ramsey, and Brett Boehm. For more podcasts, please visit foreverdogproductions.com.